Wherever you are watching us, this is Joy News. This is The Pulse on a Friday, the 3rd of May, 2024. Good afternoon and welcome. My name is Elton Brovin. Now, this afternoon, we take you back to the block factory at Istra Circle here in Accra, where two off-duty police officers were gruesomely killed by unknown men on a motorbike. Residents are now living in fear. Today, we speak to experts about maintaining personal safety as fear grip residents of that community. Also coming up today, Ghana improves on the World Press Freedom Ranking, but what really is the state of the Ghanaian media? We have a conversation on that coming up here on The Pulse as well. And what progress is government making towards addressing the power crisis? Today, we hear from the Energy Minister who insists the current power crisis is not doomso, but doomsayer, as he says, it's only an NDC government that has witnessed doomso. Folks, the Pulse is brought to you by Global Communities Digilu, affordable, safe sanitation for all. We are live on DSTV channel 421, GoTV 125. Follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and myjoyonline.com for these and more. We shall be back to deal with them. My name is Elton Robe. Stay right there. Right, this is The Pulse here on Joy News. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Wherever you're watching us, where you can join us. If you have comments, if you have questions, whatever it is you want to talk about on the issues that we have on the table this afternoon, you can join us via our social media handles on Facebook, on YouTube, and of course on myjoyonline.com. Now, the power crisis is still a major issue here in the country. This weekend, I'm sure that if you are expecting to have a very exciting weekend, you expect that your electricity will stay on. Energy Minister Dr. Matthew Opoku-Prempeh is doubling down on government claim that there is currently no doomsday. The country has been battling intense power crisis that has resulted in severe outages for weeks. This week, President Akufo-Addo announced that the crisis had been fixed, although analysts insist there's still some load shedding being carried out by the power producers. Now, answering questions before Parliament's Government Assurances Committee, Energy Minister Dr. Matthew Opoku-Prempeh claimed the outages it's rather doomsayer and not doomso. Here are excerpts of his engagement in Parliament today.
To talk about doomso as you want to drag me into it. But I told you that when I got to the ministry, we've gone past the era where we had 72 to 96 days of light out and 6 hours of light on. We are in the era of doomsayer, which is profoundly different from doomsayer. Doomsayer, as inflicted on Ghanaians, has only happened as characterized His Excellency John Dramani Mahama's governance. He is the only president on record that for 4 years that he reigned, for 4 years that he ruled, for 4 years that he governed, doom, 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 doom. If the non-partisan colleague says that now it's worse, then I don't know where his relatives lie. Thank you, Sir Chairman.
Mr. Minister, I'll let you come. Colleague members, we want to plead with you, please. Let us stick to questions that have been captured in the document, so that we would be able to make headway. So please let us stick to the questions.
Honorable Minister, I want to place something on record. President Mahama is the only president who has taken responsibility for doing so. It has happened since time immemorial. All the heads of state or presidents in the history of this country have suffered doing so. Even President Kufuor's era, they had to import toy generators from outside under Kofi Adda, Honorable Kofi Adda. But President John Mahama was bold enough, humble enough, and took responsibility and said he was going to solve it. And he did solve it.
Thank you very much.
Before President Mahama left office, we have excess capacity.
Thank you, Rankin.
We have excess capacity.
Thank you, Mr. Rankin.
And our generation was about 83%.
Thank you, Mr.
Rankin. You only came to add about less than even 4 or 5%.
Mr. Rankin,
so
thank
please,
you.
Let's get that on record. President Mahama is the only president in the history of this country
let's
who has solved this.
Let's make a headway.
Thank you.
Akimoda, MP, please.
Chairman, thank you so much. Let me take this opportunity to commend the minister with the way he has handled the question so far. I think that in the midst of all the issues that he's raised, if the figure of coverage of 88.7 is anything to go by, then the minister and his team need this commendation. I want to bring the minister to page 9. A question asked by Honorable Kwabena Mensah-Woyomi. On the 21st July 2021, he asked the minister steps the ministry is taking to get aquatic weeds removed from the lower Volta Basin, including all the tributaries of the river within the South Tong and Dangbe East districts. Want to ask the minister, the assurances that were given, it seems not to have been done. So, Mr. Minister, what is the current status of Mr. Kwabena Mensah-Woyomi's question?
Thank you. The Volta River Authority commenced the Lower Volta Dredging Project to address weed proliferation by altering river conditions to inhibit weed growth. The project involves deepening the river channel, enhancing navigation, minimizing flood risks, and reducing sunlight reaching the riverbed to impede aquatic weed growth. It also includes removing nutrient-rich substrate from the riverbed to deprive the weeds of essential nutrients. If you do recall, these weeds were not particularly of a local nature. They were introduced probably inadvertently. And so we need to alter the characteristics of the ecosystem for which the weed proliferates. And that's what the VRA is doing. There's no start date and end date, because once you are altering somewhere, you create the conditions for the weeds to go somewhere. So it's eternal vigilance and continually monitoring the situation so that you can keep the weeds growth to the barest minimum and prevent them from causing accidents and things on the river. Thank you.
Thank you. Any follow-up question? Okay, so we'll go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is question 586 from the Hansard. 586 from the Hansard. That's page 20 of the handout. 20. But from the Hansard is 586. So the question goes to the minister. On the 29th of June, Mr. Minister, the Honorable Daniel Nsala Wapar, MP for Kwandai, asked the Minister for Energy when the following communities in his constituency were going to be connected to the national grid. And he mentioned communities like Yadimakura, Atefufu, Kachipe, Adapache, Dubong, Ugando, Banajado,
right, so welcome back. This is the pause here on Joy News, and Kwaku Asante was in Parliament during this hearing by the Government Assurances Committee. So Kwaku, the Energy Minister, I mean, everybody was looking forward to his comments on the energy crisis, and he says what?
The Energy Minister said is what we are currently witnessing is not doomso. As in, the technical definition for doomso, which is a lack of power generation. Mm. He says they are only trying to fix something. But of course, we know that from the record, that is not accurate. Because when the Mines and Energy Committee met all the stakeholders in the energy sector, the conclusion they came was that there was a challenge with fuel. The fuel to power the thermal plants that would generate electricity. Mm. And that is a classical case of what doomso situation is. The president also spoke this week and pledged that his government had fixed the situation. Mm. In fact, we understand now that there's a lot of fuel. John Jinapo actually talks to Joy FM and says that, well, at least the kind of race pipe we've seen now could last for a month. That is, if it will take off again. And so, but Energy Minister Matthew Pokuprempe does not accept any explanation or any understanding that the current energy crisis that we've had is doomso. He says, again, it is doom CCA, and the government is on top of the issue. They are trying to fix it. But of course, as you heard the ranking member for the committee and MP from Kwanta, John Otibles, pushing back, saying that the situation is not, and also pushing back to the claims that the energy minister makes that it's only John Dramani Mahama that witnessed doomso. So the bottom line for the energy minister, the man in charge of running the entire energy sector in the country, is that we are currently witnessing is doom CC. This is not the first time he said that.
Absolutely.
Recall the last time there was a similar energy crisis of a similar magnitude but shorter in nature. He again was on record saying that it was doom CC and not doom so that we are currently witnessing. And the government.
So this was a public interest question. The minister was there on a different business.
Yes, he was there to answer questions on assurances that he had made on the floor. In fact, they catalogued about 100 of promises and assurances that the energy minister or his assigns had made on the floor regarding the energy sector. So the MPs took them through. And in fact, the committee did not want to allow any of that. Some MP had to just smuggle through the question and ask the energy minister to do that. The energy minister took the bait, responded to that and said, they've been trying to drag him in all along, but he is going to answer to that and that this is doom CC. So he was there to answer questions about the assurances he has made on the floor, how they are meeting those assurances, and exactly how government is trying to get people around the table to fix some of those gaping challenges with the entire energy sector, and this question was thrown in.
So, and then one matter that stood out for me and was challenged by some members on the minority side on this committee was government's position that they have extended electricity to 88% of the populace,
yes,
leaving just 12%.
Yes.
As President Akufo-Addo, during the inauguration of the solar panel in the Upper West Region, said that government is hoping to do 100% coverage by the end of the year.
Yeah.
And some MPs had reservation about this figure, 88% electricity coverage across the country.
In fact, definitely one MP that took quite a concern about this, NDC MP for Solar Tuna Kalba, Andrew Daruchiwite, who challenged the kind of statistics that the minister had put through. Because for some of them, then there was the MP for a place, Kwame Danso.
Kwame Danso, that's the Pru West.
Exactly, Pru West. And he talks about what he thinks he's seen is in his constituency. The idea that electricity generation has not really gone down to the place. But the minister said the figures are there to show that the penetration in terms of electricity across the country is now way above 88%. Mm. And just like the president had said in Kaliu, in the upper West region or Upper East region just a week ago, that government is trying to show up and ensure that by the time President Akufo-Addo is leaving office at the end of 2024 and in early, that is January 7, 2025, the electricity coverage across the country would have been 100%, and that is something that the government is committed. But as usual, of course, there were some NDC MPs on that committee who challenged that. But of course, they were not able to provide any contrary figures to what the minister provided. This is the man who supervised the energy sector. He says, this is what we have done, and that is the record he's presented to the committee.
All right, away from the Government Assurances Committee, the majority had a news conference today on the SML and the GRA contract,
yes,
and also gave indication what they will be doing in the coming days to compel the speaker to come. So the majority in parliament has jumped to the defense of the Ghana Revenue Authority deal, SML deal, insisting no wrongdoing has been occasioned. The NDC and some civil society organizations have been demanding the termination of the contract following the issuance of government-wide paper after a KPMG audit. Addressing journalists in Parliament, Majority Leader Alexander Afenyo-Markem warned his NDC colleagues and CSOs against posturing that could destroy indigenous Ghanaian businesses.
It's clear also from the KPMG report that what the company is doing, especially in the downstream, is very critical, and it has helped government to generate revenue. proud to their engagement, the manual system which was leading to bringing about a lot of leakages, made it difficult for government to determine in real time such revenues. And it is clear also from the report of KPMG, which Mr. President gave highlight on to GRE, that indeed this company does not only have the experience, what they are doing is a novelty. Now, we are aware that our friends in the NDC are calling for certain prosecutions. I think that they have not really paid attention to the whole issue, and they just want to do politics as usual. Their call is unfounded for a simple reason, that there isn't any established proof of any officer of state causing financial loss to the state. What I want to urge our colleagues in the opposition is that they should not kill Ghanaian businesses. Oftentimes, under the guise of due diligence, under the guise of ensuring that there's transparency, we often get out of control and destroy Ghanaian businesses. Whereas foreign firms who operate in certain sectors get the kind of protection that makes them develop their business, oftentimes Ghanaian businesses suffer.
The majority again insists that the legal issues raised by the NDC and the civil society organizations against the deal in particular, they demand that the deal should be put before Parliament for approval, are without basis.
We also note that the contract initially suffered some setbacks at PPA, where on three occasions PPA, through its enhanced due diligence, had challenges with it and declined approval. But whilst that is a fact, it is also a fact that the GRA and its board took steps to rationalize these and address the concerns made, and subsequently sent back the document in 2020 for PPA ratification, which ratification was duly approved somewhere in August. So clearly, whereas GRA was compelled to proceed on the principle of necessity to raise revenue for government to address the leakages, it was also mindful of the need to comply with law and therefore took steps to act accordingly. This is also a fact on record. We've become aware again that some civil society organizations and, of course, our friends in the opposition are raising issue of constitutional breach and statutory breaches. It is important to remind them that the Section 33 of the PFM Act, upon which they mount their argument, is really not applicable in this case. Reason being that although this is a multi-year agreement, if you carefully read the PFM Act, it makes reference to Article 181 of the Constitution.
So that's the majority MPP side in Parliament, and beyond their position on the Ghana Revenue Authority SML contracts, they also they've taken certain decisions that may compel the Speaker of Parliament to act within the confines of the law. Kwaku is with me in here in the studio. Kwaku, there's a push for an early recall of Parliament. Why?
Elton, the clock is ticking for Speaker of Parliament Alban Bagbin. Per Article 1123 and Order 53 of the Standing Orders, the majority have been able to garner more than 100 signatures to recall Parliament from its Easter break. Mm. Parliament went on break in March of this year, and I've since not been back. And in fact, from the indication of Parliament have given, they intend to return somewhat in the latter part of May. Mm. But by virtue of this orders in Parliament having been triggered, the Speaker of Parliament has no room mm-hmm. to maneuver. He's required under law to recall Parliament in 7 days. We understand this memo from the majority leadership was sent to the Speaker of Parliament yesterday. The 7 days clock has started ticking. Mm. Today, yesterday, 2 days. The whole of next week, 5 days. So either on Friday or Thursday or Wednesday next week, the Speaker of Parliament has to necessarily recall Parliament mm. because the constitutional criteria to meet this have been met by the majority side, who have been able to garner 100-plus signatures to recall Parliament from its Easter break. We know now that the Speaker of Parliament is not in the country now. Mm. The Speaker of Parliament is still outside the country and are taking some official businesses. The majority side says, if he's unable to be here, the deputies are there. In fact, at this news conference, there was Joe Osei, who was just seated there, clearly indicating that he's ready to preside over the House if the Speaker of Parliament elects him to do so. And even if the two deputies are not there, the majority side says, per the new standing orders, you can elect a member to preside.
They've done
so twice.
Yes, in fact, they're in the president.
A.T. Hamon and the member of Parliament, Sunani East. So they clearly believe that has been made, and urgent government business cannot do it. Listen to the majority leader lay out the key business for which reason his side won the Speaker of Parliament to recall the House.
Our intended recall. Colleagues in the media may be aware of the fact that on the 20th of March, Mr. Speaker adjourned the House sine die. At the time the House was adjourned sine die, there were 3 items of urgent importance to government that had been advertised to be taken. They were advertised on the order paper of the day. And these were the items. 1, the adoption of the 34th report of the appointment committee on His Excellency the President's nomination for appointment as ministers, regional ministers, and deputy ministers. 2, motion on additional financing agreement between Government of Ghana and the IDA for an amount of $150 million to finance the ongoing Greater Accra Resilient and Integrated Development Project, also known as the GARID. 3, request for tax exemption for selected beneficiaries under the 1D1F program. On the first item, you all know that Mr. President did some reshuffle and came out with some nominations. As you are well aware, the appointment committee sat on all of the nominees, interviewed them, engaged them, asked the relevant questions, and the report, as was tabled on the floor, was by consensus. So all we left to do is to take it through the motion of voting. On the issue of the GARID, that is the IDA, $150 million, the committee had done its work. In fact, we had taken the motion, and the Works and Housing Subcommittee, Committee of Parliament, had expressed certain views. And Mr. Speaker advised that the matter be taken back to committee and the leadership of the Works and Housing Committee be asked to join to express their views so that such views get incorporated. In fact, this was done, and all that is left is for this item to be taken so that government can access this concessional facility to shore up our forex. We all know the situation with our city, and these are things that, if we are unable to speedily deal with, would affect our economy.
So that's the majority leader, Alexander Afenyomark. Bakwaku, before I let you go, obviously there will be some financial implications on the states if the recall should happen.
In fact, when these calls were mooted, Dr. Dominic Ayini, who at the time spoke to Raymond Akwana Front, said the cost implication is just too huge. And in fact, some minority leadership are still making that point, although they are not yet to come to the record. Some of them who are speaking of the record, they say Parliament will reconvene in the next 3 weeks at least. Mm. And so if you are going to reconvene the House in the next 1 week, why can't you wait for the next 2 weeks? Because you have been without substantive ministers in some of these ministries for the past 1 month anyway.
And these ministers say that they have special communication from the President
exactly,
to act
in this ministry.
So they are working?
They are working. These loans that you are trying to get, that there are no even guarantees that you may get it through the House. You could lose it. Okay? So there are those who say that those are not necessary. And in fact, the cost implication is huge because when it is not time for Parliament to resume and you are calling the House, it means you foot the bill of every single MP from wherever they may be to come to Parliament.
Ghana, abroad, outside, you pay for
wherever they may be, you need to pay fully for those persons to be able to return to the country. There are so many MPs who currently are not in the country because Parliament has been on break. They are outside doing all sorts of things, their private business or being in official duties and all that. And so all these persons would have to be brought down to Ghana in the next 1 week. And that is a huge cost implication that some have argued against. But there are those who say that, well, democracy comes at a cost. And so if you want to do this democracy business, if you want to be able to maintain Parliament, to be able to run and do what it has to do, then you must pay this bill. Clearly, the majority side do not care about the cost. They say that there are urgent government business that simply cannot wait.
The thing is that there's been a precedent before. When John Mahama was in power, the MPP MPs then, led by Dominic Nitiwu, sponsored a petition. They got the signatories and they got Parliament record. Their motion was to get Parliament to probe into this fraud bribery scandal that a report had been put together by Manasseh Azuri Awene. And then the Speaker then, Dua Jaho, had no option than to recall Parliament to sit. But before the motion could be moved, a member arrested the motion and then it was debated. Eventually, the motion was defeated before even it would be moved. And then the House was adjourned again indefinitely. So there's been a precedent, but wait and see. The Speaker has 7 days to act on this petition. Is he going to recall Parliament or going to wait for Parliament to reconvene somewhere in the later part of May? Wait and see. But Ghana has made significant strides in media freedom, moving from 62th place in 2023 to 50th in the latest World Press Freedom Index by Reporters Without Borders. But what are the indicators? On the screen now is a breakdown of the World Press Freedom Index 2024. And so this is what we have. Ghana is currently in the 50th position out of 180 countries. That is the latest as we celebrate World Press Freedom Day. So this is the between 2018 and 2024, what we have. So 2018, Ghana occupied it on the third position. 2019, it moved to 27 from 23rd position. 2020, from 27th position to 30th position. Maintained 30th in 2021. And then jumped from 30th to 60th in 2022. Moved 2 places more to 62nd position last year, 2023. And has now come down from the 62nd position to the 50th position as of now, 2024. That is the current rank. Now, the Ghana's index score stand at 67.7%, also an improvement from the previous year. So this is how we progressed from 2019 in terms of the index. There's been 1.7% increment from 79.9% in 2019 all the way coming down to 67.7% in 2024. So the highest we went, that is between 2019, 79%, and then 2021, 78%, but there's been a decline from 65 last year and now to 60. There's been an upward in terms of the index from 65 to 67 from 2023 to 2024, representing 1.78% increment. But in terms of how free the press is, it's come down from 62% to 50%. Now, there are some indicators that is contributing to whether our situation is improving or is getting worse. So in terms of political, it was 61% political influence, political intimidation, harassment here and there that can be linked to the political establishment. We scored 61.88% in 2023, but 2024, 59.5%, 2%. In terms of the status, the red means that it is bad. And so in terms of political harassment and intimidation, economic, legislative, and social, economic talks about the working conditions of the journalists. Legislative is about the laws that protect journalists. And social, I mean, what you and I do, and then the security implications of it, how protected our journalists are in the country, that is high, that is very good, 82%, social 73%, legislative laws that protect journalists, not the best. Economic conditions of most journalists is nothing to write home about. Political harassment and everything, that's also 59%. So clearly, there's still a lot more that should be done in terms of the ranking. Well, today on the Pulse, we are discussing the state of the Ghanaian media, and I'll introduce my panel shortly. But first, the Deputy Minister Designate for Information Service, Atete, has pledged to back the repeal of a provision of criminal and offences at 1960. Now, this provision labels journalists to have committed a misdemeanor if they publish or reproduce information likely to incite fear, panic, or disturb public peace, knowing or having reason to believe the information is false. He was speaking at an event at the residence of the German ambassador on the eve of the World Press Freedom Day.
As Ghana joins the rest of the world to mark World Press Freedom Day, questions about media freedom in the country continue to be asked. The places from 23rd in that year to 62nd in 2023. One of the laws that can cause the arrest of a journalist is the Criminal and Offences Act, 1960 Act 2(9), which says a person who publishes or reproduces false information commits a misdemeanor. But the Deputy Information Minister Designate, Sylvester Tete, who defended the attacks on journalists that have taken place since President Akufo-Addo took office, said he will support a bill to repeal the Criminal and Offences Act if presented before Parliament.
If you look at all the infractions that has happened over the last 5 years, I doubt if all the infractions directly coming from political actors, not non-political actors as well, that has contributed to these infractions we are talking about. That's why I keep making the point that it's a shared responsibility. Education, advocacy, reforming our laws. Look, there are occasions that the ministry itself or government itself had to issue statements condemning the police action on some of these matters. I've shared that position personally going forward. Today I'm in government, tomorrow I may not be in government. That is how life is. Tomorrow I'll end up perhaps practicing as a journalist. So if I help to ensure that the space, the ecosystem is free and fair, it benefits everybody and entrenches democracy. So nobody is taking that it's stuck that you can't do anything about it. So if us, you know,
so you are in favor of repealing it?
We should. I mean, as a matter of fact, we should.
Okay. Executive Director of Media Foundation for West Africa, Suleimana Brahma, bemoaned the rate at which politicians are starting to own media companies which are used for political propaganda, and called for a law to be implemented that will ensure that media owners have the capacity to pay their workers before they are given license to operate.
A lot of them are set up by politicians, you know, an MP, and you can name them, you know them. And so it's all about, if my party is in power, I use my position to go for a frequency, set up a radio station in my village to do the propaganda for me as the MP for the area. So I think the first thing is to have regulations that would set up certain parameters on who is qualified to have a radio station in terms of your management capacity, your resource capacity, the capacity to recruit at least a minimum number of professional journalists to be able to operate.
Professor Audrey Gadekpo is the Dean of the School of Information and Communication Studies at the University of Ghana.
We know that there's a lot of talk, a lot of concern about disinformation. We're about to go into elections, and I worry, and I know that our lives are going to be miserable, because now we even have AI, and AI is allowing all kinds of things to happen. So there is a lot to be concerned about, and we ought to insist.
Deputy Executive Secretary of the National Media Commission, Alexander Ni Kate-Bannerman, said the commission is trying its best to protect the safety of journalists.
If you talk about safety of journalists, I was at Class FM today, and I asked them, why didn't they report? We have seen it, and we've been there. Actually, it's with the police investigating. So I encouraged them that last year we held a program with Ministry of Information on the status of some of these infractions. So I encouraged them that they should get us the chronology of events so that we can do a follow-up with the police.
The theme for this year's World Press Freedom Day is A Press for the Planet, Journalism in the Face of the Environmental Crisis.
You're welcome back. So let's now expand this discussion. And of course, I've got, you know, the experts to deal with the issue regarding the media, because this is our day. Emmanuel Oparijan is National Organizer, Private Newspapers Publishers Association of Ghana. Mr. John, you're welcome to the Pulse.
Thank you,
news.
Mother.
And we'll also be joined by other players in the industry. We'll also hear from you what you make of the work of journalists. You can join us with your comments, contribution via social media handles, either on Facebook, on X, and of course, myjoyonline.com, and of course, on our YouTube channel. And then we'll share it. It's Friday, so let's all have fun as we celebrate the work of journalists. Mr. Jan, first, let me ask of your initial remarks as we celebrate this very important day.
Thank you very much. I think it's a yearly affair that is done since 1993. And every year, a team is chosen for the celebration to remind reporters and journalists of the need to be part of national development and global improvement. And I think this year's one is on environment. Mm. And I want to believe that as a Ghanaian, I think it's a good thing for us, not only to celebrate it today, to consider it towards the end of the year and ensure that the right thing is done for Ghana, Mother Ghana.
Right.
And I believe that at this point in time, it gives us an opportunity to discuss the issues. Mm. So today, too, I think whatever we want to do, we can do it.
We can do it. Yeah. All right, fine. So I'm just going through the parameters that they inform the decision to place Ghana where Ghana is right now. And the broader headlines that they looked at the media landscape in Ghana, and going down, there's also the political contest. There is also the legal framework, economic contest, social cultural contest, safety of journalists, and of course, so let's start from the bottom. It says, journalist safety has seriously deteriorated in recent years. Several attacks on press freedom have been registered, including the intrusion of ruling party supporters into a TV studio and an attack on a journalist during a live report in October 2023. Politicians have also made death threats against investigative journalists. Most cases of police violence against journalists are not pursued. The same goes for murder of journalists. 5 years after the brutal death of investigative reporter Ahmed Hussein Swale, the investigation has grounded to a halt. Worse still, the Attorney General and Justice Minister told Parliament early this year that criminal prosecution had not been initiated due to lack of evidence.
But if you see the total ranking relative to 2023,
right,
you could see that security, it has been very good for us as a country.
Exactly.
It has moved from 61.25 to 82.94, which is a good score as a country to have it. And it's good for us as the media partners to know that at least security is improving for us to work. And what is needed here is, what were the issues last year,
right,
up to date? Mm-hmm. What happened last year in terms of journalists, the security of journalists and others? And I want to believe that even though we had one or two issues with the police, by and large, the freedom is there for us to work.
Mm.
And it's very encouraging. Let us continue to see the positives of the ranking than to always go back. If you want to go back always, then we have to go back to the 90s. Issues happening in where there were shit bombing and others, even though recently there's been this petrol bomb issue at this thing.
At Class FM.
By and large, you always have one or two extremists who want to believe that you have touched me and I want to touch you back. Mm. But general security for the media, I think it has improved based on the ranking that we have.
But in terms of people who perceive journalists as, you know, threats to their own maybe livelihood or the kind of work they do, is it the case of misunderstanding of the role of the journalist that sometimes they go to the extreme of attacking the journalist, Or it is simply because of the kind of work we do that we become target of people's
anger? Yeah, because we are the voice of the voiceless. Somebody, my action must be to deprive somebody of his wealth. But because you are there as a media practitioner working to bring out issues for the public discussions, you want to put it at the front burner for discussion.
Mm.
That person sees you as a threat. Mm-hmm. And you know how the instincts work. When somebody sees somebody as a threat, be it business, be it politically, the attack is there. But it does not mean that we are not getting that the needed atmosphere to work. It's there for relative to what happened years back.
Mm.
It's quite good. We need to continue to engage, establish a partnership with the necessary institutions and the bodies to let them understand us better than just to say that, okay, you attack us, they will continue also to attack you. And that is where, from Primpa, that's our perspective.
Mm.
We, because we are media owners, we believe that when the environment is not conducive enough, we cannot thrive. When the owner survives, the employees will also survive. So the environment must be conducive enough for us all to work. Mm. And we believe that we are moving towards from days of where you ask your reporter for assignment, you come back and tell you I couldn't even do it because of fear.
Because of fear.
But these days, those things
are not really as pronounced as
it used to be
some time back.
And people are more concerned even to give you the information than where sometimes you have to, it takes difficult situations to get
the information
that I want.
But classical example that remains unresolved is this Ahmed Sueli matter, 5 years on. Now, the Attorney General, in a briefing before Parliament in January, indicated that, the office is unable to proceed with prosecution because of lack of evidence. Now, it remains unclear whether Ahmed Sueli died because he was doing his work as a journalist or something unrelated. Does it surprise you that, then clearly, the matter is going to die a natural death if there's no evidence for the AG office to prosecute?
Oh, I don't think that it will have that natural death. There are issues of death and murder which it has taken years to unravel the situation. Mm. That is my conviction, that one day, whatever led to his death will be in the fore for all to know. So I still believe that, because if you look at how other, let's take the death of the murder of the MP,
mm.
it has also taken years.
Right.
And others. But we believe that if there's a need for us to improve our intelligence system to gather those information, then let us do it. We should not take one isolation case to deal with and say this one has taken too long. Equally, there has been a lot of cases that are still pending that the police service is not clear on the issue. I see it from that angle. But once he's a media person and it happened to him, I think the interest is there more than any other situation.
Mm.
And I want to see one day
There will be finality to this issue than to
say that it has taken that too long.
Mm.
Because there have been cases which has traveled more than even 10 years and they are still telling that they are working on it. If it's an issue of not having enough evidence, let us encourage people to come out.
Mm.
Sometimes it's those who have to come out to give the evidence. That is where the problem is.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. We are discussing the media fraternity in the country, are you happy with the way we've conducted ourselves? You can tell us via your comments on our social media handles. But one key issue that is of utmost importance is the economic situation of the journalists, because when that is compromised, then it opens the journalists to all manner of issues. Now, there are in Ghana, most media outlets face financial difficulties, resulting in low salaries and poor working conditions for journalists. New newspapers are often launched, but only to fold within months because they were unable to cover their production costs. State-owned media, on the other hand, are awarded government advertising contracts and are paid in essence for publishing information. Non-transparent and unfair procedures are used to allocate state advertising. Now, this matter, Primpark is best suited to explain the seriousness of this matter. So, from Primpark point of view, how is the economic situation and pattern of newspapers, for example?
Very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Let me admit, very, very difficult to be in the newspaper industry.
Mm-hmm.
The industry is dying. is dying. Day in and is dying. And it's affecting everything.
Why is the industry dying?
New trends of putting out information is part of it. New ways of doing things is also part of it. Because those days when we used to, you carry the newspaper, distributed through the normal channel to other regions, it takes you a day or two. These days, before that newspaper got there, the information is already there. Social media is also part of the issue. Then, corporate Ghana is also part. Corporate Ghana is not helping the industry to grow. We survive on adverts. About 70% of newspapers' income for your survivor should come from adverts. But corporate Ghana is not doing that. They are not helping.
They are not advertising with the print?
They are not advertising. For adverts, it's a general thing that they are doing to the media. But when there is issues of press release and press conferences, they see the role of... And we are trying to encourage corporate Ghana to appreciate the fact that when the newspaper survives, it's for the benefit of Ghanaians. It's not necessarily for the owner or necessarily for the person who works on the paper. It's for the general interest of Ghana. When issues are brought out through the newspaper, like what the other media houses are doing to try to encourage Ghanaians to adopt best practices in the mining industry,
right,
encouraging Ghanaians not to cut down their cocoa trees and others. When this is done, Ghanaians begin to accept it and adopt proper way of doing things. I think the business will grow, everybody will enjoy. But when it's dying, where would those being trained from our institutions go? It's a whole issue of an employment area that we need to sustain it. And government might also develop policies and programs in terms of adverts, in terms of capacity building and others. It should be seen to be part and parcel of national development and growth.
I'll come back so that we will take the issue one after the other, especially on the issue of the fact that social media is taking over your business. The question is, what are you also doing to stay ahead of social media? We'll deal with that. But because you raised the issue, I just want to find... So 10 years ago, for example, in terms of circulation, how much were you doing 10 years ago?
10 years ago...
And now?
10 years ago, circulation was enough. Circulation and sales, let's combine the two. Circulation and sales, including subscriptions and others, were enough to cover your production cost.
10 years ago?
Yeah, 10 years ago, about 7 years ago, let's do about 10 years ago. Circulation was enough to cover your cost. But as we speak, circulation and sales will bring you less than 30% of your expenditure.
So every day when you go to print, you are losing?
Yeah, you are losing. So now the frequency of production is what people are adopting now. Instead of doing daily, people are doing weekly.
Once in a week.
Once in a week. Instead of daily, you are doing once a week. Maybe once in a while you look at the number of production that you do. Then you look at how to reduce, because there will be returns. So you look at your income, your expenditure, the returns. Then you look at, okay, I'm doing so much and I'm getting returns of maybe 20 or 30%. Let me cut it and see where I can send and get at least maximum sales of 80%. That's what we do. And subscription, that's what I say, corporate Ghana. A lot of institutions these days don't do subscription again. They will tell you that they are also being affected by the economic issues. And therefore, they have reduced the subscription, which is the guarantee of your income per production. That one is not there. And when it comes to adverts, unfortunate as well, politically, they have tagged newspapers to political groupings. So, for instance...
Isn't it because of the kind of service
you pursue? I take it from two perspectives. Assuming it's what they are saying is right, is it not better for me, as a Daily Democrat owner, to appreciate the policies and programs of that political party that my people write for, and always bring out everything that they want to push it out for Ghanaians to get informed? Equal another paper like maybe Daily Guide or any other Chronicle or whichever it will be, we also have to be aligned itself with another political party.
Right.
They also bring out what the other political party is also doing. So Ghanaians have the opportunity to be informed. You pick the two papers, the perspective is there for you to appreciate it. Come
come out, make an informed decision based on the two angles of the newspapers.
Right.
Than to say that because you see me, I write for more often.
It's for want of a pro NDC newspaper.
I'm pro NDC, and therefore, because government is in power, when I give you adverts, I'll have problems with the system. So I am denying advert totally.
Is that what you are facing?
That is the reality on the ground. Mm. That is the reality on the ground. But that is unfortunate. You see, at the same time, then another one will also say, okay, another time, because you enjoy it from the other side, me too, I can't do business with you again. And we are all suffering. Mm. We are saying that corporate Ghana, for the interest of Mother Ghana, support newspapers. Do away if you think that you'll be
tagged. But corporate Ghana is supposed to be neutral in all of this. If you're not getting advert from government institutions, I may understand to some extent.
We are the voice of the voiceless, isn't it? Mm. We are part of national development. We are there as a platform for people to channel out what they cannot do. That's why we do it. Assuming we do it and the security system is improved, the environment is improved, the health system is improved, who is benefiting? Everybody is benefiting.
Right.
Assume that we do it and we talk about taxes. Mm. And maybe there's a particular tax that we think this tax will kill businesses. And it becomes a discussion for the papers to talk about who benefits. So they should look at the work we do, the impact of the work we do to society, than to limit me because I am this, and therefore I will not give you advert. Please, give advert to every paper.
But the challenge that you spoke about, first, that people are not really buying the newspapers.
Yeah, the sales has got go.
Sales has gone
yeah,
down.
Sales has gone down.
We're not getting the advertisers' money.
No.
So how are you surviving paying your utilities and then salary of your reporters?
Yeah, that's where it's another challenge. But you know, sometimes when you can be at an equilibrium, the break-even point is there for you to survive. So you look at it. Okay, I'm doing with maybe 6 staff. Currently, I cannot do with 6 staff. Where a work that was done by one person, now you begin to combine the duties. Mm-hmm. So going out those days, you go out with a reporter plus a cameraman. Now you go out, you should be on your own. Sometimes you go out with a driver plus others. Those things are you look at your cost. Now we are looking at our cost and how efficient we will be in the production of the industry. That's what we are doing. And there are new technologies of production too. We are trying to align ourselves to those areas as well.
The thinking here is that if people are not buying the newspapers, you should find a way to still reach out to your audience, including the setting up of a website, including the use of social media, so that if the market has moved from the traditional sources of news consumption to now the use of technology, you should be there as well.
Pulling up to Mickey D's just for drinks? Oh yeah, that's me. Nothing extra, just perfection and a straw. Coming in hot for the coldest cups on the block. Because there are drinks. Then there are drinks from McDonald's.
Ever combine an ice-cold frozen Coke with piping hot fries? Try frozen drinks any size for $1.49. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Remarkable change begins with daring to be different. Baby, I'm on a mission with Boost Mobile to putting the latest phones in the hands of more people. Introducing the signature Coach Prime Razor, only from Boost Mobile. Rush to your nearest Boost Mobile retailer and get your signature Coach Prime Razor on us. Get after it.
Limited time discount available online only while supplies last. Taxes extra. New customers only. Must activate the device within 30 days to avoid paying full price. Offer subject to change.
Hello, Saver. Whether you're saving for that trip to the tropics or saving for an emergency, now is the time to take advantage of Wells Fargo's savings options. Wells Fargo offers savings accounts that can help you save towards your goals. So, what are you saving for? Visit a Wells Fargo branch or wellsfargo.com/save to open a savings account today.
Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
Everybody is moving. I can say about 80% of our members have now moved in the last year or two with online attached to their work. But we are saying that the fact that the online is now the prime source of information. That's not mean that we should leave the newspapers out.
Yeah.
As a country, because it also it has its own benefit to society and to the country. That's why we are also trying to keep it and find a way to let it be more profitable in doing the business. So it has become a portfolio to our business now. You have the online, then you have the newspaper as well. So you combine the two.
You combine the two at the same time. But that's what everybody, I can tell you for sure that even for traditional radio and television, which sometimes is the immediacy aspect can be guaranteed.
Yeah.
Social media has become a rival, which means that if you want to survive in this very competitive environment,
you have to
be there.
Yeah.
And you have to take the information wherever they are. It may be on YouTube, it may be on TikTok,
Facebook.
That is the only way you stay ahead of competition. Otherwise, you'll be overtaken by events.
We also
But there's also the issue of political interference. The report makes reference to the seemingly silent control of the media by the political establishment. And sometimes the establishment of media houses by politicians. And how that compromises the quality of the professionalism of reporters and the media houses.
I don't see personally controlling my reporters what to do or what to write. That's your area. You have to determine the story you want to bring.
No, but the psychology of the paper may determine
But you see, normally, do you know how this report, they only judge the paper by the front page.
Right.
You get it.
Mm.
But the paper, Santa Lepa, is 16 pages paper.
Mm.
And there are various areas of contribution. Health, agri, foreign, international. And there are so many things there that instead of picking the whole paper and go through, when I pick this paper, 10% was allocated to political, and sometimes even the political comment is not only limited to 1A. Because we have grown together, there are that integration there. You might be here, you have a brother who is also the other side of the. So the stories are there. And I think that this issue must also be properly looked at with the various groupings that are doing the research to come out with this. Sometimes we should discuss.
Right.
We only see the report. I think sometimes after this, it should be discussed so that wherever they had the info,
we
look at it and say, okay, we said so because A, B, C, D is the evidence.
Right.
Then also, no. Then maybe you also had it wrong because you could have gone further to open the paper and look at the other areas. That every paper does sports.
Mm.
Entertainment. Tourism, entertainment, all those things put together, economics and other things, health. So I don't see why you only pick a front page.
But the front page is the one that attracts.
No, but it's the whole paper. When you are reading a book, you don't just pick the book and say the book title is the murder of this who is talking. No, read it and appreciate what is in the book than only to make an opinion based on the cover. I think that we admit sometimes one or two people will go to the stream and do this. But these days, for newspaper industry, those court issue is not there like in the 90s where anything you write, you receive a call. You wrote this, okay, we'll meet at the court. But these days, I think because there's opportunity for us to cross-check.
Right.
Mobile phones are there to quickly call someone. In the 90s, and this thing, if you want to do a cross-check of your story, you have to walk to the person's office and you not even get the person. And there's no other sources even to do that. But these days...
I'll give you a final words as we celebrate this. Yeah. What would you advise to journalists and media owners?
I'll first advise government, the state. Mm. I normally want to use the state to appreciate the role of the media.
Mm.
And let policies and programs also help the industry grow than to always wait and see the violations that once in a while is committed in the course of doing our job. I will encourage our friends to continue to do what is right. Doing what is right is something that you have to be happy doing it.
Mm.
Sometimes you step on the toes of others, but continue to do it. Take your personal security into consideration. Too much of "you can't do me anything" sometimes can end up somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever you find yourself, don't move into areas that are not friendly to you. If you think that area is too hostile for you to go and do story, please don't do it. Or when you are doing live reporting and you think that the people who are demonstrating, you have a a contrary opinion, and you are reporting the contrary opinion in the midst of that.
You must be responsible for your own personal security.
You must be responsible for your personal security. So, and also urging media owners that they should also explore other avenues to bring in more income so that it will trickle down to them.
Absolutely. And I guess you speak for your staff. Absolutely. When you say that you should explore other avenues so that they can. All right, thank you very much. So, Mr. Emmanuel Oparijan is National Organizer, Private Newspapers and Publishers Association of Ghana. We've been looking at the World Press Freedom Day today, celebration of the work of journalists and how that is impacting on the socio-economic development of the country, the challenges they face, and how sometimes government policies and programs also fuel some of these things. We'll take a short break. When we return, I'll tell you about the two police officers that were killed yesterday by an unknown gunman. Welcome to the second half of the show. This is The Pulse here on Joy News. Now, it's becoming deadly out there as rampaging gunmen target and kill over what no one else is sure of yet. But a gruesome murder of two off-duty police officers has left the community of Block Factory at East Chasako here in the Greater Accra region in fear. The Ghana Police says a manhunt is underway to arrest the perpetrators who fled on a motorbike. My colleague Masala Gbagba has been to the community all day and he joins me in studio. Maso, so what did you uncover?
Well, quite disturbing. The details that we've been learning, quite disturbing. This community we're talking about, Block Factory, is just some meters away from the motorway. So when you're driving on your right-hand side, just less than 50 meters away, you find that sprawling.
From the main Accra Tema motorway?
Yes. Okay. So you find the community East Trasako, where quite a number of people, you know, live, and there's a place where they mowed blocks. So I'm just assuming that's why they named the community,
right,
you know, Block Factory, and this is where the police officer actually lived. And we're learning that in fact three of them lived in that house, but on the day of the incident, that's on Thursday, sometime around 6 p.m., it was just two of them who were seated on a bench in front of that house.
All right.
So that was when we were told that the unknown gunman. So that's the bench, where they usually sit, you know, during the evening, just to have conversation and also catch up with what.
And so this is where they sat last night.
This is where they sat last night, having conversation amongst themselves, and then that's the building there. And then the gunman pulled over, fired, and then ran away. What we were told was that the two officers who were seated on the bench, one of them actually tried running back onto the compound, but he fell unconscious. And on the compound, there, when we went there, the blood on the compound was still visible. The blood was still splattered there, you know, on the floor. We were told that he died instantly. Mm-hmm. One of the co-tenants told me that he was hit in the arm and then also on the head. So he died instantly. The second police officer, we are told, tried fleeing the scene. So he tried crossing the motorway, but was unable to do so, and fell in the grass that's just some meters away.
Because he had been shot earlier.
Yeah.
And was trying to run away.
Exactly. So what we are learning was it wasn't just one, two, three gunshots. It came in rapid succession. And so they were hit at a point, but they tried to flee, but they were not successful. They couldn't, you know, survive it. What we are learning also is that right after the shooting, the unknown gunmen who were on a motorbike were able to flee easily because, I mean, the motorway was just right by their side. So it was easy for them to.
And I guess at the time, everybody was afraid to even get close.
Exactly. So one of the co-tenants who we spoke to told me that she was in a room when he heard the gunshots in rapid succession. So she came outside and then saw the chaos that was happening. But nobody could get close because at the time the gunmen
were still around.
Some disturbing information we are learning is that some children who were playing actually saw everything, how everything panned out, which is quite disturbing. I'm told these are children about 5 years,
wow,
but they were probably spared because they were young. If they were to be adults, then
it would have been a different story.
It would have been a different story altogether. We are also learning about the police officers that one of them is actually a bodyguard of a member of parliament. And I was told the member of parliament who is the bodyguard of, but we're not putting out because we've not independently verified, you know, that yet. We're told that There were three of them who live in that house. The number could have been three because usually the three of them would sit outside there on that bench having conversation. But the third officer, we are told, had traveled at the time. Mm. So we're just left with two of them who were seated outside there having that conversation, you know, when the incident happened. Mm. I've been speaking to a brother of one of the deceased policemen. He's related to him. He said he comes from the same hometown, and he calls him as a brother. The last time he saw him, one of the officers, was 29th April. Mm. And he had just come to visit him when the incident happened. So we can hear him and then hear what he has to say. So that's Noah, who comes from the same village from who comes from the same village with one of the officers, policemen, who was killed, narrating how the last time he saw him was 29th April, so he decided to pay him a visit just so they could reminisce about, you know, the old times, the good old times. Just when he visited, you know, that incident happened. He said he had entered a room to pick something, and then he heard a gunshot, and then people started screaming his name, telling him that his brother had been shot outside. He came outside and then saw exactly what had happened. So, yeah, it was a sad situation. He was very inconsolable, you know, when we got there. This is him being calm and being sober, you know, now and trying to narrate to us the events of, you know, what happened. But I think we learned on the ground also is that this is not the first time there's a shooting incident there. According to the co-tenants, one of the co-tenants of the deceased policeman, a man was actually shot there sometime last year, but he survived. And then when he recovered, he left the community for fear of his life. So this is the second time they're
Are they able to establish motive? What may have led to all of this as of now? What is the talk on the streets?
Well, the talk on the streets, one of the co-tenants who we spoke to, who thinks that this could be a bit remotely, you know, connected, she talked about, again, this is no information that we can independently verify. She said that there's some dispute over land. And she suspects that because the policemen are friends to one of the parties involved in the dispute, it could probably be a remote cause to what has happened. And all of this, she's saying, because she's trying to wrap her mind around, you know, what has happened at this point, trying to make sense out of it. And she says the closest thing that she can actually think of that she thinks could be a remote cause to this could be probably that dispute where some people think that they are friends to one of the parties. So probably, you know, could be one of the reasons why, you know, they were killed in this, you know, gruesome manner. But again, this information we cannot independently, you know, verify.
Right. So the police says that they are on a manhunt for the assailants.
Yes. So we were on the ground. We met the police officers, personnel from the Criminal Investigations Department. They were collecting the needed evidence that would help them, you know, arrest the perpetrators. They were all tight-lipped. They would not give us any information. They would not speak to us. So all the information that we got were from eyewitnesses and then eyewitnesses and co-tenants of the deceased police officers.
All right. Thank you very much, Salam Baba. And he was at the community and he brought us the latest information on this very unfortunate situation where two police officers were killed or murdered by unknown assailants. And the police say that they are on the manhunt for the individuals. Now let's move to some other stories now. And the Public Service Workers Union of the Environmental Protection Agency has petitioned the Office of the President over the allocation of the official residence of the Chief Executive Director of the EPA to the Interior Minister. This followed the leadership declaration of an indefinite strike yesterday, set to have commenced today, May 3rd. The strike was prompted by the union's objection to what they perceive as an attempt to evict the EPS Executive Director, Dr. Kingsley Krugu, from his official residence for the new Interior Minister. The Minister of Works and Housing, through a letter dated March 18, 2024, and signed by the Sector Minister, Kojopon Nkrumah, allocated the disputed bungalow to the Interior Minister, Henry Kote. The Chairman of the Public Services Workers Union of the EPA, Goswe Lawson Daniel, speaks for the group.
We've decided to call off this protest because just after yesterday we had an engagement with our management and we were assured that they are going to sit with the Ministry of Works and Housing and also Interior Ministry and, you know, resolve the issue. We trust our management and the board. So we would like to call off the protest and hand over everything to our management to resolve. But then the leadership of PSWU, EPA, is going to petition the Jubilee House, will petition the ministry, will petition the board of EPA and the executive director of EPA. We are hopeful that we'll get a positive response after petitioning these institutions. In case we don't receive what we are expecting, then we'll call on you and inform you on our next line of action. Mondays, the Ministry of Works and Housing should consider Environmental Protection Agency in any decision of the ministry giving the residents out. EPA has occupied the residents for 50 years now, and we should be the first institution to be considered, even if they want to let the bungalow out to any other institution. Again, we want the Ministry of Environment, Science, Technology and Innovation, which is our mother ministry, to intervene and help resolve this issue on our behalf. And we know the ministry have come in and help us in several situations in the past, and this is not something that they cannot do. We are sure they can do it, they can resolve it. That's why we are going to petition them.
Meanwhile, the General Secretary of the Public Service Workers Union of TUC informed Joy News that he's been in talks with the Works and Housing Minister, expressing optimism for a forthcoming agreement on this impasse.
If our members at the EPA brought it to our attention of the developments in relation to the residence of their executive director, and that has been the residence of previous executive directors of the EPA since 1974, per their records. Subsequent executive directors have occupied there without any problems or challenges. And they have gone ahead over the years to carry out some renovation works, including expansion and all that. So it's just become something like an official residence for the head of that institution. Every institution have residences for the chief executives or MDs or executive directors, as they may be called. So they have occupied this place for a very long time. So anytime there's an executive director, they assume. But I believe the message that got to me as at yesterday was that it looks like there's some directive for the executive director to vacate the premises for another minister to assume that resident. Of course, this raised some concerns among the staff, and therefore they had a meeting and that decision was taken. I've engaged the Minister of Works and Housing, and I thank him for the courtesies. He's given me a perspective on what is really happening. I've engaged my people at EPA as well. As at now, I wouldn't want to go into that on air. I mean, when you are working with partners, you must respect each other's view. But my engagement with him has brought some perspectives on the issue, and of course, that is why I think in discussion with the union at EPA, the best thing would be to hold on. Let's see if we can find a better way of resolving this. Then if we have understanding. Nobody wants any disturbance. We are already struggling under very difficult working conditions and challenges in the economy, which is affecting workers. Workers are struggling to have resources and equipment to work with, not to talk about the difficult, bad working conditions they work in. No worker is really interested in going out to cause any disturbance, but sometimes the frustrations also get people to react. But
now let's understand the issues better. The chairman of the union, Gosway Lawson Daniel, joins me via Zoom so that we can understand the issues better. Mr. Lawson, it's good to have you here on the pause. Good evening.
Happy that you granted me the permission to speak on your network on this matter.
Thank you. Is your executive director homeless as we speak?
Currently, the executive director of EPA FDA, Dr. John Kingsley Krugu, is still occupying the official bungalow of EPA.
A bungalow?
So he's not homeless.
He's not homeless. A bungalow that has been in the possession of the EPA in the last 50 years.
Yes. The EPA has actually occupied the bungalow for the past 50 years, and all successive executive directors of the agency have been staying there since 1974. You know, it used to be a two-bedroom bungalow, and the EPA refurbished it to a four-bedroom bungalow, which is currently the status of that particular official bungalow.
All right. So then you got communication that the executive director should vacate this bungalow to allow the Minister of Interior to move in.
Yes, exactly. We received a letter from that's Ministry of Works and Housing. That's 18th March that the official bungalow of the executive director of EPA has been reallocated to the Minister of Interior. We were not happy with this later, actually.
And basically, you don't even operate under the Ministry of Interior to start with. You operate under the Ministry of Science, Environment, and Technology. It's like moving, you know, property that belongs to an entity under one ministry to another ministry. But what justification did they offer for this, you know, removal, if you like, by eviction?
Okay. Looking at the letter that was written to EPA from Ministry of Works and Housing, they copied our former executive director in the name of Dr. Henry Kokofu. Unfortunately, they didn't copy EPA as an institution. But according to Housing, they do allocation of government bungalows. And they felt that, well, this time around, they need to, you know, reallocate it to the Ministry of Interior. Our question was, well, if you are giving it to Interior, what becomes of our current executive director, Dr. John Kingsley Krugu, who is currently staying in that bungalow? Are we going to eject him? Are we going to move him into another bungalow, which probably may not be of same standard as the one he's living in now? That's been the question bothering our minds.
And have you gotten a response to these questions?
We had a discussion with our management and also Armada Union, Public Service Workers Union, the General Secretary.
Because the connection to Mr. Daniel appears to be acting up. We'll see if we can reestablish communication. There are a few things that we want to find out. They embarked on a strike action. They wanted to suspend work altogether until this matter is resolved. Now, the court of that strike action this morning because of some intervention that came through. Hello, sir. So you were explaining to me the justification that you got.
The General Secretary of the Public Service Workers Union, Brother Bernard Ijay, later on informed us that he indeed had a discussion with the Sector Minister for Works and Housing, Honorable Paul Nkrumah, who said that the EPA will have to apply for another bungalow, which, you know, meaning they still want to take this current one away from EPA, and we are not happy about that because the agency has actually invested a lot of money in the this current bungalow.
So what more are you planning to do to protest this and ensure that you keep hold of your bungalow?
Okay, after the meeting with our management and the decision to put a stop to our planned strike, we've also decided to petition our sector ministry, which is the Ministry of Environment, Science, Technology, Innovation. And we've also petitioned Ministry of Works and Housing. We've petitioned the Chief of Staff at the Jubilee House, asking all of them to agree on one thing, that's to leave the bungalow for Environmental Protection Agency, which has, you know, we have occupied it for 50 years now. In case the housing minister wants to allocate it or give it out, EPA should be considered first.
And I'm guessing that you are here to get response to the petition.
Exactly. We are waiting. We are hopeful that by next week, we should receive feedback on our petition to these various offices.
So we should expect that on Monday, you'll be at post, you'll work normal like you always do, as you allow the officers that you've petitioned to resolve this matter amicably.
Yes, as of 10:30 to 11, 12 noon, the staff of EPA went back to their offices and started work. You know, they all got the news. We had called off the strike, but we are going to remain in our red band in protest, you know, in support of the petition that is before the Chief of Staff and also the Minister of Works and Housing. We also continue engaging our management and board to ensure that remains EPA's, you know, official bungalow.
All right.
This bungalow is very important to the environmental protection, not only for us, but the executive director of EPA receives some public officials and also holds some meetings at this bungalow. And we can't let go. In fact, we don't know what the Works and Housing Ministry is going to allocate to us next time. So we will pray your all EPAs to put EPA in this particular matter.
Thank you very much for your time this evening here on The Pulse. And, of course, we'll follow up on this matter and bring you developments if we should have it. Now, to some other stories, and construction works have begun on some inner city roads of the Volta Regional Capital Hope with funding from the World Bank. The projects, which falls under the Ghana Secondary City Support Program being implemented by the Ministry of Local Government and Rural Development, will see the selected roads receive bitumen surfacing for the very first time with some drainage works. There's more in this report.
Under the Ghana Secondary Cities Support Program, some roads in the Volta Regional Capital of Ho would see some facelift. The roads that would be constructed with a grant from the World Bank are the Bob Kofi CK Road, Blissam Zion Junction, Chaco Market Road, Ahwen Public Toilet Junction Heve Road, and Barracks Newtown Road, among others. Opeña Construction and Fet Sky Limited have been engaged to undertake the construction of the selected suburb roads. Gabriel Kweku Dega works with Bans Consult Limited, the supervising agency.
And now on the surface dressing of the road, which also include all those roads that I've mentioned. Blissam Zion Junction, Scrub Road, and the Market Chaco Road. That's the work we are doing. As at this stage now, you are seeing, we are doing our primer seal for the various places that I've mentioned.
So after the priming, what happened?
After the priming, we are coming to do a seal. That is the first seal. And then after that, we do the second seal. In the local language, we say first quota, second quota, third quota. So after that, then we do line marking of the road, design of the road, and then the signposts in the various areas of the road.
Some storm drains in the capital would also be constructed to ease the devastation effect of perennial floods. The Home Municipal Chief Executive, Divine Bolson, said the road construction forms the core of an agenda to flood the municipality with development projects.
Before we can fill the whole urban status, we should also be doing development so that in the future we would de-urbanize Ho, so that the urbanization will start affecting the peripheries of Ho. That is how we plan a city. So we must load Ho with development. so that when the whole is overloaded with development, all other municipalities and districts in the region there. And that is why we are doing this now. This fund is only meant for the main urban area. That's why the name goes secondary city. We must build city.
Residents have lauded the initiative but entreated the contractors to ensure value for money and construct the roads to perfection. Fred Kwame Asari, Joy News, Ho.
And from the studios here in Accra, my name is Elton Robert. That's our show for today. It's been an exciting week. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. Stories, Dumso Mahama, the only president to have Dumso. That's according to the Energy Minister, Dr. Matthew Opoku Prempeh. That's our show for today. We'll be back to same time next week, Monday, for another exciting edition of The Pulse. Have a good evening and take care.